I did find the little bracelet. It may not be important, but it may be important to somebody. And if it is, I have it. I'll leave it in the office when I leave today. I read not too long ago an article written by a national columnist, syndicated columnist. His 82-year-old mother had been to the grocery store. Normally, he or one of his siblings would take her to the grocery store every week, and they had continued to do that. But there was this place that she called the Little Store that was just a couple of blocks from her home, and she would walk down there to just pick up a few items when she needed some specific things. And so she had walked down to the Little Store, gotten a few things, and then when she decided to check out, she had $30 with her, and it came to about $32, $33. And so Mom said, well, I have to put some things back. And she put back the alcohol that she used for her diabetic injections. And she also put back a package of jambalaya. And so she left those two there. A couple of minutes later, this young woman came up behind her and said, you might need these. And so she put the two items down there. This national columnist had written an article headlined, An Open Letter to the Good Samaritan of Paducah, Kentucky. And somewhere out there, he had honored this person who had honored his mother. Thoughtful thing to do. The thing that jumped out to me is everybody who read that letter knew what he was talking about when he said Good Samaritan. There are probably lots of folks who don't realize that Good Samaritan comes from the Bible. People who don't even pretend to believe the Bible recognize that term and utilize that term and talk about being a Good Samaritan. In the United States, 37 states have Good Samaritan laws. Again, pulling that right out. This is probably the most popular, the most well-known of all the parables that Jesus teaches. Prodigal son may be a close second, but people know the story of the Good Samaritan. And it touches their heart and it means something to them. And it can be used in culture, it can be used in discussion, because there is a reference point to something that is very, very biblical. It's a great story. It's found in Luke chapter 10. And I mentioned last week that all of the information that we'll look at from Luke chapter 10 is exclusive to Luke. It occurs nowhere else. And so that might be useful as we go along. We'll start in verse 25 and go down through verse 37. On one occasion, an expert in the law stood up to test Jesus. Teacher, he said, what must I do to inherit eternal life? Now, there's a key word there. The man is there to test Jesus. And sometimes people look at Jesus' reaction to questions and say, well, why does he react very openly and in a very transparent manner and teaches very demonstrably and effectively? And in other situations, he will do sometimes what feels like totally the opposite. And the truth is, Jesus knows when the person has a genuine heart and when the person has something that's he's trying to entrap him in some way. And so he answers differently depending on the situation. And you'll notice that Jesus is extremely distant and extremely cavalier about the way he answers this man. What is written in the law? He replied. How do you read it? He answered, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, and all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. Jesus says, you've answered correctly. Do this and you will live. And I'm thinking the guy's probably a little bit disappointed. He's there to test Jesus. He's there to trap Jesus. He's there to get him engaged in something that they can utilize in some particular way. And so Jesus just basically is not giving him any answers. So you can just see the guy go, okay, I've got one he can't answer. But he wanted to justify himself, so he asked Jesus, and who is my neighbor? Is that a good question? Try explaining to your children who their neighbor is. The neighbor is the person who lives next door. No, the neighbor is not the person who lives. Now, the person who lives next door can be a neighbor, but it's not always the person who lives next door. It could be the person that you ran into at Sam's Club. It could be this person, that person. It could be a classmate. And so kind of kids look at you and say, well, would you make up your mind and decide who our neighbor really is? And the reality is Jesus is talking about people who need us, or people who have a connection to us, people that we can bless or uplift in some particular way. The amazing part of this, though, is that Jesus doesn't just answer the question. He says, let me tell you a little story. And in this brief story, he describes, not only for this man, but for people across all situations, who really is a neighbor. A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he was attacked by robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. A priest happened to be going down the same road. When he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. So too a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he traveled, came where the man was. When he saw him, he took pity on him. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring oil and wine. Then he put the man on his own donkey, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. The next day he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper. Look after him, he said, and when I return, I will reimburse you for any extra expense you have. Now think for just a minute about how vulnerable this Samaritan makes himself. Number one, he's taking a life risk and even stopping. This could be a setup. There could be somebody else who's fixing to attack him. That's not what he does, or that's not what happens. He risks his life, though, in doing so. And probably the part that's even more difficult for us today, whatever it costs, I'll pay it. Can you imagine somebody in a healthcare situation today and somebody saying, don't worry about it, whatever the cost is, I'll cover it. That makes you extremely vulnerable. And Jesus just uses him in this powerful example way. Then Jesus just says, okay, one more question. Which of these three do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of robbers? The expert in the law replied, and listen to this answer, the one who had mercy on him. Now, why did he answer it that way? You get the feeling he doesn't want to even say the word Samaritan. He's not even going to let that word come out of his lips. Jesus says, go you and do likewise. It's great to serve. And God put inside of us, I think when it refers to us in Genesis as being made in God's image, one of the things that we like to do is we like to be helpful. We like to be useful. We like to serve other people. And probably if you've had the experience of being a good Samaritan, and many of you have, you've also had the experience of that not going like you would want it to. I read another story of a couple who brought a homeless man home. Am I gone? Is that okay? Is this one? Okay. They brought a homeless man home to stay with them for the evening, provided him a place for him to stay. They got up the next morning and their car was gone, $5,000 in tools, and their 2 7-week-old puppies that they had recently gotten. That's the thing that happens. And so a lot of us, when we start to be good Samaritans, and you practice that more than a couple of times, you wind up getting burned. Maybe not to that degree, but to some degree you get burned. And so what we do is we step back and go, wait a minute, I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm not going to take that chance. I'm not going to make myself vulnerable. I'm not going to give somebody an opportunity to mistreat me. And so we pull back. And when we pull back, we lose this wonderful opportunity to be in God's work. Three guys in this story, a priest, a Levite, and a Samaritan. If you've ever worked with high school kids, maybe in an ad lib situation, we used to have a children's Bible hour program, and sometimes we'd ad lib with the puppets, and we were ad libbing about this, and one of the kids was identifying the priest and the Levite, and these were people that would not have been pleased at all to have been mentioned directly as the person that was passing by or doing something that was very negative in that situation. What about a modern version of the parable? I've also asked high school kids to write modern versions, and they come up with some great ones. The Samaritan, though, becomes an issue. We certainly look at this parable and take many different lessons from it. One of them, of course, is the fact that we have opportunities to do good things for other people. But Jesus intentionally chooses this Samaritan because of the animosity there is between the Samaritans and the Jews.
The Samaritans were hated. You could look at some of the reasons, and I won't list all of them. It goes back to the time that the northern kingdom divided from the southern kingdom after the period of Solomon and the debate about whether you could worship in the north or whether you had to come to Jerusalem. After the people from the north were carried off into captivity, the intermarriage that took place in the north. Later, when the Judea came back from exile in Babylon, the Samaritans were helpful in doing negative things toward those folks. And certainly there's plenty of bad history here. But one of the things that jumps out at you is it's been a long time since that happened. This hasn't been recently. It's been hundreds of years. How do grudges survive hundreds of years? They don't survive because people have firsthand experience. They survive because people tell the generation and the next generation and the next generation about their hatred. They share their hatred. You can go to Northern Ireland even today, and much of the animosity that's there has come down, been handed down from the parents to the children, the grandchildren, over and over again. They've reemphasized all these negatives that are there. And so it's no surprise that this kind of animosity exists. Luke is positive in two occasions towards Samaritans. He quotes us this story that Jesus tells. And also over in Luke chapter 17, when Jesus heals the 10 lepers, only one of them comes back and thanks him. And Luke makes sure that we know that this man was a Samaritan. It's interesting to me that the other three gospel writers don't choose to include this information. Is there still some animosity that exists in their life and in their perspective that prohibits them from saying positive things about Samaritans? Although John does include a discourse with a woman of Samaria. We get stuck in ruts. In the Old Testament, it says, the fathers have eaten sour grapes and the children's teeth are set on edge. Continues, it reproduces itself over and over again. Now, in Jesus's time, there was this specific group, and Jesus knew that if he used this extreme group, that he could drive this point home. These Samaritans were a perfect example to use as the one who's the Good Samaritan. What about in our world? Well, it's not quite so clear. Most of us, in the dark recesses of our minds, have our Samaritans. You may have more than one. It may be a personal enemy. It may be somebody that you have hard feelings toward. It might be a family. It might be a clan. It might be a nation. It might be a race of people. It could be any number of situations where you've chosen through some process to kind of mark those people as evil or bad or unworthy. And who is that that really pops up in your mind? Who is your Samaritan? If there's anybody out there that falls into that category, then there's some reevaluation that we need to do. Jesus didn't come to resolve social issues. He came to change hearts. And so his instructions to his followers, and sometimes this is frustrating to people. They'll read about social situations that existed in Jesus' time and say, why didn't Jesus address this? Why didn't Jesus tackle this? Why didn't he say, all of my followers are not going to do this anymore? Instead, he said, what I'm here to do is change hearts. And the impact of that is that social situations change when hearts change. Go with me to a passage you'll recognize. Galatians chapter 3, verse 28. Paul there writes, there is neither Jew nor Gentile, neither slave nor free, nor is there male and female, for you are all one in Christ Jesus. Now I can just imagine people reading that passage and going, now wait a second. There's no free or a slave, there's no Jew or Gentile, there's no male or female. We live in a world where that's pretty dramatically emphasized in their time. And we look at that passage and we say, well, that was true in the way God looked at them. And that certainly is true. But there's something else to that passage that's critically important. Society has drifted toward this passage. Since that time, we've made progress in going that direction, in making this passage real. There are people today, much like people who use the term the Good Samaritan, who campaign about these ideas, these things that are included in this verse, who don't recognize that it came from God. It's God's intent that these things be removed. It's God's intent that they be taken away. Not in some dramatic way necessarily that overthrows a government, but by people changing their hearts. And all we have to do is look back historically, and we can see that in the 2,000 years or so since this has been written, hearts have changed. And you may say, well, wait a second, we still got a long way to go. Well, we do, yeah. But change takes place there. We can deal with these social situations. It's interesting to me, probably interesting to others, that when the church moves out of Jerusalem, where does it go first? To Samaria. Those Samaritans are the first people who are included as a mission area. Then that's their receptive field for a number of reasons. Part of that is the cultivation that Jesus had done. Part of that is the fact that among his disciples, the demonization of that group has been reduced to the level that they're willing to go to that place. We have all kinds of circumstances in our lives. We have all kinds of places where we look at things politically, we look at things socially, we look at things only from an intellectual point of view, and we come to conclusions. And I'm afraid that sometimes we're leaving out what God gives us and what God tells us and what God instructs us to do. You can find all kinds of people who have literally risked their lives to be a good Samaritan. There's a guy in 2010. His name was Hugo Alfredo Tailax. He was an immigrant from Guatemala. And he went to the aid of a woman who was being attacked on the streets. And instead of the attacker killing her, the attacker killed him. There's video of that street scene. And later on, they're able to identify 20 people who walked by who didn't want to get involved in this dying man. And you look at that and you think, wow, that's terrible. That's horrible. And yet, we look around us and we see serious situations going on. And often we're choosing to be the priest. We're choosing to be the Levite. We're choosing to walk by instead of being the person who really could contribute. Will it always work? No. Is there danger? Yes. Is there opportunity? There is opportunity. An opportunity to be the person that God wants you to be and to fulfill his purpose and to be his instrument. It's not without risk, but it does have tremendous potential in our world. This morning we offer not a man-made invitation, but an invitation that comes from God. If we can help you in your relationship to God, we would love to have that opportunity. If you just make that known while we sing this song together.